Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of the Dungeon Cast is brought to you by the 20-Sided Tavern. The newest interactive theatrical adventure experience is the 20-Sided Tavern, inspired by Dungeons, Dragons, and so much more. Sold out engagements in Pittsburgh, New York, Edinburgh, and now they're even in Chicago through January 15th, only at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. A unique journey that's never the same quest twice due to audience participation and interaction. It's a different ending every time. Use your mobile phone during the show to make selections, compete in games, solve riddles and puzzles, and determine the hero's fate. The Chicago Tribune says it's a new family-friendly franchise that celebrates fantasy gaming. The audience has a total blast, clearly authentic and fun. For showtimes and tickets, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons.
And today we are covering the 1D&D cleric and revised species. And we are joined again by our good friend Daniel. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
One, two, three, four. Shout out to the
yeah. Welcome, adventurers, to the Dungeon Cast.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Daniel. How you guys doing?
William, hello.
Hello.
Daniel, hello.
Hello. Happy to be back.
Dean, we're happy to have you back.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Your perspective on these issues is always one we value.
Yeah, especially you do tend to be more mechanically minded than Brian or I, so it's nice to have the fresh perspective. And we got a lot to talk about today, guys.
Daniel do math good.
Daniel does do math good.
We talk about Daniel, and we know Daniel do math good, so we bring Daniel here to do the math parts of the books we like.
We are but simple bards.
There's a place for both, right? Like, I think that you two are amazing storytellers.
Well, thank you.
When it comes to it. And I think that's just as important as doing math good. So
do math good for reasons. Shall we get into it? What's up with this Unearthed Arcana, you guys?
So the first thing that stands out to me when it comes to this Unearthed Arcana is, unlike the last one where they released three classes, they only released one. I'm curious, like, does anyone have any ideas or insight as to why one this time but three last time?
I don't know. Maybe they just like doing the work, and that's how fast it took.
Yeah, man.
That's how long it took.
They
to
just
get
don't
it out.
Got nothing else.
No, I'm not sure. I didn't see anything about why they are releasing things the way they're releasing them.
Yeah.
Well, last time it was three classes with subclasses, but then there was no other stuff. This time we have the cleric and the species changes.
Yeah, that's true.
So I wonder if maybe it's, you know, just
maybe
they
that's
have X, Y, and Z amount of content they want to put out, and it has to be X amount of pages or something.
Yeah, that could be it. Although I don't think the species really take up that much page room. But either way, let's start with this cleric. One of the first things I noted about it is it feels like the cleric. It feels like a D&D cleric. At a quick glance, not a lot's changed. But at a closer look, a lot has changed. Starting with, they don't have domains anymore. Now they have, what are they called here? It kicks in at second level. They have Holy Order, which is something slightly different, and then
looks like they're still calling them domains.
Are they still domains? Okay,
yeah.
I could have sworn I saw that it was called something else.
Subclass.
Oh, that's it.
I think it's because there's the Holy Order, which is,
and the subclass
we'll get into in a second,
and the subclass is coming in at third level instead of out the gate. That's the thing that's different right there. So, at first level, rather than get your domain right away, you get your channel divinity, which there's two of them. We have Turn Undead, which is similar but slightly different from the 5e Undead, Turn Undead, and then there's a secondary feature called Divine Spark. Let's start with Divine Spark.
I will read the Divine Spark.
Yeah.
As a magic action, which that's new flavor, that's a proper noun there. You point your holy symbol at another creature you can see within 30 feet of yourself and focus divine energy at their ass.
at them. Sorry. Roll a number of D8s equal to your proficiency bonus and add the rolls together. You either restore hit points to the creature equal to that total or force the creature to make a constitution saving throw. On a failed save, the creature takes radiant damage equal to the total. And on a successful save, the creature takes half as much damage rounded down.
Okay. So the Divine Spark to me, I think I like it. I think it's fine. I think it's great to have something that isn't particular about what you use it against, like Turn Undead is. So maybe you're in a campaign where undead just aren't going to be a thing. You still have something you use your channel divinity on, whether it's heal or hurt. I don't know if the damage or extra heals are all that impressive compared to the spells that you probably have in your arsenal. But I think the idea is correct. What do you think, Daniel?
I'm Daniel. I do math good.
You do, yeah.
2d8 to start, I think, is pretty good at first level. Yeah. That's better than most cantrips. And I think because it has proficiency bonus scaling, I think it'll continue to be pretty on par with most like first level spells, pretty much.
And channel divinity is per short rest, right?
I think it is per, yeah, it says here per long rest. So okay,
so it's once a day.
You can use your channel divinity number of times equal to your proficiency bonus per long.
Oh, okay. So, okay. That's better than I thought it would. I don't know how I feel about the name Divine Spark.
I noticed they're doing this thing, right? I know we kind of skipped past it, but if you read the whole thing, you gain the ability to channel divine energy directly from the outer planes. I've noticed this a few different times in the text of this. They're moving away from like you're using the power of your god, and it's more you're using the power of the outer planes. And so I think it's this kind of like tonal shift where they're trying to take it away from being necessarily like deity reliant, which is cool because then you can have settings that don't have gods necessarily, but
right.
It's a little bit of a shift. So I think that the naming probably is related to that.
Okay. I guess that makes sense. And I do see your point on it being useful for campaigns without actual deities. Eberron's kind of one of those a little bit where there's a lot of religions, but they more follow philosophies than actual deities in a lot of the cases. So it works there. And then let's look at Turn Undead because it's slightly different as well.
Yeah, sure. Turn Undead says, as a magic action, that is again. I want to know what that is. Is that separate from normal actions? Is this one of those things that they put at the very end of the PDF for you to read about?
Yeah, so that would be in the glossary. So okay. It's one of the things that you can use an action on. You could take the magic action versus taking the attack action.
I feel that's like a redundancy to mention it both times like that, you know?
Well, I think it's because like certain things can be done if you've taken a certain type of action.
Yeah, okay. I'll
the type of action you take is important in context to other mechanics.
Okay. So as a magic action, you present your holy symbol and speak a prayer censoring undead creatures. Each undead within 30 feet of you must make a wisdom saving throw. If the creature fails its saving throw, it is dazed for 1 minute or until it takes any damage or you are incapacitated or die. While dazed in this way, the only action the creature can take is the dash action, and if it moves, it must end that move farther from you than where it started.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, this seems better than OG Turn Undead, right?
I think so.
I don't know. So dazed is a new condition, right?
Right.
It's also in the glossary. And it says you can move or take one action on your turn. You can't take a bonus or a reaction, which is a lot like the slow spell. Previous Turn Undead, they would be forced to run away, but it sounds like they could still attack.
Well, if they're forced to run away and they only get one action.
Oh, the only action they can take is to dash. Okay, so sorry, I wasn't putting the pieces together there. I think it's kind of the same. I'm not sure if anything has actually changed.
I'm going to pull up the OG because I think with the OG they were frightened, and I think when you're frightened, you can you have to move away from the source of your fear, but you can't attack other things, right?
So yeah, and that's what it's saying here at the end is like you can move, but you have to move farther away than where
Yeah, but also because of the whole daze thing, you also can't take any other action. So that sounds more potent to me. But I'll be honest, I've never ran a cleric in 5e. So let's look it up real quick.
They're pretty fun. I ran a Bullywug cleric that you can actually listen to that game on our Patreon. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
You all played Monstrous.
Monster Aces, yeah. Those are evil campaign. We talk about it sometimes during Halloween. I think we've released it a few times on the feed also.
Okay, reading it here, it does kind of amount to the same thing, because here in the original Turn Undead, the creature fails the saving throw. It's turned for 1 minute. It must spend its turns trying to move as far away from you as it can. It can't willingly move to a space within 30 feet of you. It also cannot take reactions. For its action, it can use only the dash action to try and escape from an effect that prevents it from moving. If there's nowhere to move, the creature can also use the dodge action. I think the only difference here is that technically in the original way it's written, in the player's handbook, is if they have a bonus action, they can use it. While the new version, Daze, prevents that. By the way, Daze, direct lift from 4E. That was a 4E thing where you could only take one action.
Spicy. Yeah, so we'll just put that in the shopping cart.
If I can fit the 4E wedge in, I will. All in all, this seems fine. This seems pretty good. You've convinced me with your good mathing that the Divine Spark is actually pretty solid. So yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, con saves can be kind of hard. A lot of creatures are con heavy.
Yeah, not all of them.
Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Not undead.
Do we have anything interesting to talk about when it comes to the spellcasting feature? I think it works the same way as it did for the Bard and the Ranger, or you get everything from a particular list. You get some extra prepared spells based off of your subclass, and you don't have to learn spells. You just get access to the list, right?
I'm pretty sure it's identical. There might be some minor changes in verbiage, but I don't think it's anything that we
need to discuss. Good, because I want to talk about the next one. It's called Holy Order.
Yeah, so you have dedicated yourself to one of the following sacred roles, either on your own or as a part of a religious order, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Choose one of the following options. Protector. Trained for battle, you gain martial weapon proficiency and heavy armor training. Should I just continue on?
Yeah.
Scholar. Studying and teaching about lore of the gods and the multiverse, you gain proficiency in two of the following skills of your choice. Arcana, history, nature, persuasion, and religion. Whenever you make an ability check using either skill, you gain a bonus to the check equal to your wisdom modifier. And the Thaumaturge. Delving deeper into your divine magical abilities, you can prepare one extra zero-level spell from the divine spell list. See your spellcasting feature for more information on preparing spells. In addition, you regain one expended use of your channel divinity whenever you finish a short rest.
Okay, so I like this feature in theory. Like, I think it is a good idea, mostly because I'm a big fan of, well, I like the OG classic cleric of, like, the Templar, the war priest, right? The heavy armor, plus you're also casting holy spells, you know? But I also, due to both my love of Final Fantasy and Dragonlance, like the clerics who are the robed caster types, right? And D&D has never really rewarded that type of play. You're usually hamstringing yourself if you don't, you know, find a way into heavy armor. And usually it's harder to make a cleric without heavy armor anyway, so why go out of your way to do it? This kind of is the beginning of, hey, you could go both ways on this. But the problem here is, and I've seen this argument a lot lately, is that casters way outpace martial characters in general, and it's way too easy for casters to get heavy armor in general. Because heavy armor is so good for casters, like, why would you ever take these other two when these other two are very underwhelming to me?
Right. And I think there are a handful of subclasses for the cleric that also gave it in 5e heavy armor.
Like a lot of cleric. Them. I would say half of them.
I remember playing a Forge cleric and being kind of pissed off because you don't get heavy armor. And I thought that was crazy. Such bullshit.
That is bullshit.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, Or no, you get heavy armor, but you don't get martial weapons. That's what it was. And I'm like, bizarre. I'm making the fucking weapon, y'all.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
But, oh, I saw it. Didn't they change spiritual weapon to be no longer concentration spell?
I don't know.
I think so. I think I read something about that on the Discord. Okay. Because Diggy, who's our other admin on the Discord server for the Dungeon Cast, which everyone should join. It's an amazing Discord.
You should.
Link in the description.
He's like a cleric specialist.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He knows clerics better than anybody else. It's where Chemicult is all about the bard. Diggy's all about the cleric. Yeah, he was doing a bit of a deep dive in the Discord on this, which I may have stolen some notes from. Sorry, Dig. I will say, like, I have mixed feelings about this because I think it has the potential to be really good. I really like fighting styles from the ranger and from the fighter. And I think missing one or two who also get it. There's a few different classes that get fighting styles and fighting.
Paladin gets it.
There we go. That was what I was missing. And I've always thought it was really good because it adds just like a little bit more specialization and a little bit more like kind of narrowing in on what your theme or what your vision is for your character. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this helps with that. But I do agree that the protector is probably going to win out a lot of the time. The one thing that I will say for the Thaumaturge, though, is they get a channel divinity back on a short rest.
Which is cool.
Potentially really good for a spellcaster. Like if you go spellcast heavy, that could make or break.
Yeah, I agree that is pretty good. I think the first thing I think of when it comes to how do I make the Thaumaturge on par with picking protector, and that's well, what if I could add my wisdom mod to any spell I cast healing or damage? I think that would be enough to make me go like, you know what, fuck heavy armor. Like, I'm going to be a glass
even
cannon.
Even just the cantrips, or sorry, zero
right.
level spells.
Yeah, I know, right? Or that, or that to too. I definitely think Thaumaturge needs a little oomph, and Scholar needs a whole of a hell lot more if you want like people to actually pick it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian.
Skills are cool. I like skills, but not more than I like these other things.
Yeah, and also, spoilers, later on, you get to pick another one anyways.
Oh.
So it's like, if you want it, Scholar, you're just going to get it at level 9 or whatever it is. It comes up.
I mean, that's a little far away, but, you know,
yeah.
I see your point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's my thoughts.
It's kind of like the rogue, where like you're really just like skillful, right? Using Scholar, which is fine, but that's... I don't sit there and say, I don't know a lot of people who really want to play a jack of all trades when it comes to D&D. Like, you want to be able to blow shit up and do cool things.
Yeah, also,
and being like, I know a lot about nature, it doesn't come in handy.
Yeah, and also, if you did want to be a jack of all trades, you'd probably be more attracted to the bard or rogue anyways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. Okay, after this, it starts becoming very identical to the OG cleric from the PHB. Is there anything in these features, Dag, that stands out to you as being worth talking about? Because, I mean, Blessed Strikes is just basically
so
from the PHB.
Blessed Strikes is from Tasha's. This is actually one that I did want to talk about. So previously, do we want to read it off before?
I do.
Awesome, go for it.
Seventh level. Blessed Strikes. Divine power infuses you in battle. When a creature takes damage from one of your zero-level spells or your attacks with weapons, you can also deal 1d8 radiant damage to that creature. Once you deal this damage, you can't use this feature again until the start of your next turn.
So the reason I thought this was OG PHB is because I use the character builder and it doesn't tell me which book it comes from. I'm like, that's just a thing that I can choose.
If you select optional class features, I think they're just like, give everything to them.
Yeah, exactly.
So previously, this was 8th level for 5e. And then also, this was an option to replace your 8th level subclass ability. So almost every subclass gives you something called Divine Strike at 8th level, which is essentially just you do a d8 anytime you roll a weapon attack for some of them, and then for like the Arcana domain and a few others, it's whenever you cast a spell that does use a spell attack, you get to add a d8 of radiant damage. So they changed that with Tasha's to be
Either or.
Well, to be either, yeah, either a cantrip or a weapon attack. And it's 1d8. And so here they're doing the same thing, but they're also moving it back a level to 7th instead of 8th.
So basically, like, you get it a little sooner. Also, it was optional before, mm-hmm. and now you just get it.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Pretty much. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I think that's a good improvement. Like, cool. Divine Intervention. It's a feature that you get as a cleric in the PHB. Have they changed it enough here to talk about?
Well, Divine Intervention, let me see, that's 10th level in the PHB, right?
Yeah, here it's 11th level. So
once again, they're just kind of shifting things around one or two levels, which is kind of non-consequential. Yeah. I don't think it's any different.
Yeah, it read mostly the same to me, so I wasn't sure if there was much to talk about there.
A roll percentage die, hope for the best.
Right, should I read it since we're spending
time on it? Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Yeah, sure.
The 11th level Divine Intervention. You can call on your deity or pantheon to intervene on your behalf when your need is great. As an action, describe the assistance you seek and roll percentile dice. That's scary. If you roll a number equal to or lower than your cleric level, the divine power intervenes. The DM chooses the nature of the intervention. The effect of any divine spell is appropriate. If the intervention occurs, you can't use this feature again for 2d6 days. Otherwise, you can use it again after you finish a long rest.
Okay, so I just read the PHB one alongside you there, and it's pretty much the same. The only difference is the PHB one says that you can't use the feature again for 7 days. The new one makes you roll 2d6, so could be less.
How Gregorian.
Gods are a little bit moodier in 1D&D is what I'm hearing. They kind of
I guess so.
Not really sure what day it'll be.
Yeah. Depends on my mood.
2 to 10 business days, we'll talk.
The plane of fire is in retrograde. I can't help you for 7 days. That's
hilarious.
I need to consult my crystals.
Let's see. After this. The only thing left really to talk about when it comes to the UA cleric before we get to the subclass mm-hmm. is that at 18th level, you get greater divine intervention, which is basically your divine intervention just succeeds now. And the difference here is that the cleric from the PHB got that at cap at 20th level. So again, just like the other classes, they've moved the cap back and they've replaced the cap for the class with the epic boons.
Epic boon.
You were going to do it.
Yes. You gain the epic boon of fate or another epic boon feat of your choice.
So, yeah, I mean, we talked about epic boons last UA episode, mm-hmm. and I generally like the idea. I don't know if most of the boons really stood out to me as like something that I was like clamoring for. Mm-hmm. But the idea is cool, and yeah. I think that still stands here.
I mean, I think the epic boon of fate, if you want to read it, is actually pretty cool. I read through it last night.
And I was is that a new one in this UA? Yeah, we can read it.
I'm pretty sure it's new to this.
Let's see here.
Page 11.
You got it, Brian?
I'm on my way.
All right, cool. I'll get this life domain stuff lined up then.
Epic boon of fate. Prerequisite is 20th level mage or priest group. When another creature that you can see within 60 feet of you makes a d20 test, you can roll a d10 and apply the number rolled as a bonus or a penalty to the d20 roll. Once you use this benefit, you can't use it again until you roll initiative or finish a short or long rest.
Okay. I mean, that was it. Influencing rolls mm-hmm. pretty substantially,
pretty
right?
Pretty heavily, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. D10 I mean, yeah, that's solid. Yeah, especially at level 20, that's pretty cool.
It's once per combat too, which is I've never seen.
Oh God! Encounter powers are coming back.
Like that. Yeah,
encounter powers are coming back.
In 5e, I'll say I've never seen a phrase like that before.
Yeah,
yeah. I know you love 4e.
We'll get so I do. I mean, there's also a lot of things I don't like about 4e, but since we're talking about 4e, I have been, like I said earlier, seeing a lot of discussions about the disparity between martial characters and casters. And that's an old, old argument. That goes all the way back to second and probably even first edition, for all I know. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't realize that fourth edition was a reactive, it was a reaction to that argument. Because 4E did a really good job of making sure that wasn't an issue anymore. by drastically changing the way, you know, the mechanics of combat worked. And now I find it funny that here we are at kind of like the twilight years of 5e, and people are really fired up about this disparity between the two types of character classes. Now, you know, I've ran Super Quest Saga for the last few years, and all three of them were casters, so I never really felt that disparity.
What the hell is Super Quest Saga? That's what I would say if I was listening to this and didn't know anything about it.
It's our sci-fi space opera D&D 5e campaign in my homebrew world with Brian, special guest Jake, and friend of the show, Josh Freeland. You guys should check it out.
We kickstarted a book.
Yeah, we got a book. We're coming out with a book, Star Seeker's Guide to Jacket Star, where we're going to detail out how to run your game in this awesome space opera science fantasy world.
There it is. Your touchdown for it. If you haven't heard about it before, like, that's kind of weird if you're a longtime listener of the show. But
it would be odd.
If you're just tuning in, like, we do have that. The whole campaign is there for you to go listen to. Indeed. It's super fucking awesome. Indeed. We highly recommend it, obviously, because we did it. We're proud of it.
What are your guys' thoughts about the disparity between martial classes and casters?
Daniel, you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with the general discourse. Like, I think that marshals tend to get a little bit of the short end of the stick, and I think a lot of it kind of comes down to action economy, because, you know, you get action, bonus action, and movement every turn, and even for, like, a 20th level fighter, you get, what, like, four attacks or three attacks, which is fine, but you're using a weapon that doesn't D8 or D12 at most damage, so you're never really going to compare to a wizard who's just fucking summoning, like, almighty hellfire.
Yeah. Or altering reality.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's always felt a little lacking, especially compared to 4E, where, you know, for people who haven't played 4E before, you got what were called powers. There were daily, there were encounter powers, and there were at-will powers. And they were essentially like your subclass features and class features, but you could use them at different frequencies, and they really, like, changed up and varied combat quite a bit, in a big way. And so it feels a little cyclical that, you know, there's all this talk about the OGL ending and about refocusing on marshals and all this stuff. And it's like, oh, are we going back from 3.5 to 4 again?
Right. Seriously. Yeah.
I really would like Avatar The Last Airbender kind of personifies this a lot, where Sokka, character that can't do magic, is just like, what the fuck am I supposed to do, you guys? Like, you guys all are wizards and I'm just a dude. But he closes the gap by being creative. I wish there was a way that we could kind of show that with the fighter and other martial classes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you can kind of, by being flavorful and creative, like the Battle Master was always a lot of fun because flavoring that stuff was great. That was my first, you know, class that I played.
I've seen a lot of arguments that the Battle Master should have been core class for 5e fighter. Like, you know, all fighters should have gotten Battle Master.
You know, it's
that would have been awesome.
It's funny that you say that. I read a similar thing the other day, but slightly different, where they took what you would call the four martial classes, which would be fighter, barbarian, rogue, and monk. And they said that the most basic of the subclasses for each of those, so you would have like the berserker, the champion. The thief, and the wave of the open hand. The argument was like those features that you get from those should just be built into the class, and then you should be free to pick another subclass kind of on top of that. And it would feel more robust and more like it should and more on par with casters. Like, I don't know how that plays mechanically, but it sure sounds like it could be an answer.
They could make it work if they really want.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the role play, I mean, you can be as creative and flavorful with your attacks as you want. You know, describing your movement in combat is your freedom. Like, the spell just kind of says what it does, and you can kind of flavor that too a little bit here and there, but it does what it does. You as the fighter, you know, this is how I look when I'm attacking.
Right.
That can also kind of get played out.
It can.
Fighter using a bunch of different kinds of weapons, I think, is also cool.
Yeah, and it would be cool if there was a mechanic in place that really rewarded that type of play.
Yes, that's what it's missing. Like a tool, like a Batman toolkit or something like that would be cool for the fighter. Use extra actions to tie a knot. I see a lot of people trying to get weird, you know?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
So, yeah, stuff like that, like grappling hooks and things for movement. Maybe. I don't know.
All right.
One of the coolest ways I ever saw somebody use a barbarian. I was playing Storm King's Thunder. I was actually a player for one. And our barbarian, we were up against like a young blue dragon, I think it was. And he just grappled and like held the dragon's mouth shut while everyone else just like beat on it.
That's awesome.
And I was like, that's fucking smart.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty fucking cool.
Take this. My magic spell is called biceps. Fuck your mouth.
Pretty much.
Oh God, I said a thing. I'm
you
sorry.
Did say a thing. Let's move back. Let's move back to the subject at hand because we've gotten way off course. Let's talk a little bit about the subclass that they include in the UA, the Life Domain. I pulled up the PHB version because I want to. When I read through this morning, I was like, this reads very closely to what's in the PHB. I'm not sure if there's enough difference here to talk about.
I'm on Life Domain, so if there's something you would like. All
right,
to read,
let's just go through it, and I will read the PHB version alongside, and we'll compare and contrast.
You want me to just read it straight up?
Yeah, we'll do the feature at a time.
Feature at a time. So go down to like third level domain spells. Yeah. Or what are we doing?
Yeah, we can start there.
Cool. Is this like paragraph before worth reading? You think?
I don't have it open, so give me a second.
It's just the flavor text.
Probably
looks
not.
Like. Okay, so on third level.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go for it.
I was going to say the only real difference is they don't list specific gods in the new flavor text. They're just like Life Domain, give life. In 5e, right. They're like, oh, here's a bunch of gods who you might.
Yeah, I thought that was cool for newer players. They're always like, well, what gods can I worship? And then there was a list, right?
Right.
And then this is kind of, you know, it's not just right there, I guess. Yeah. So I don't know if that's good or not. So domain spells, third level. Your connection to this divine domain ensures you always have certain spells ready. When you reach a cleric level specified in the Life Domain, scroll, spells table, you thereafter always have the listed spells prepared. These spells don't count against the number of spells you can prepare, and they follow the rules of the class's spellcasting feature. You're going to get third level, Lesser Restoration and Prayer of Healing, fifth level, Mass Healing Word, Revivify, seventh level, Aura of Life and Death Ward, ninth level, Greater Restoration, and Mass Cure Wounds.
Okay, so it looks like they changed out one spell for each level there. So at third level here, it says in the PHP, it was Lesser Restoration and Spiritual Weapon. And what was it for the
then
UA?
It's Mass Healing Word and Revivify.
Okay, and it says here you get Revivify at fifth level. So it seems like they focused more in on healing than we have here in the PHP.
Then we have Aura of Life and Death Ward at seventh.
The seventh, we have Death Ward and Guardian of Faith.
Okay.
On PHB.
Guardian Faith is a cool spell.
It is, but it doesn't heal.
No, doesn't. Does a fuck ton of damage, if and I then, remember correctly.
What was ninth level?
Ninth level is Greater Restoration and Mass Cure Wounds.
Here it's Mass Cure Wounds and Raise Dead. I almost feel like that's better.
Is it?
I mean, you get to raise the dead.
Greater
it's
Restoration
better.
Is a really
is
cool
really
spell.
Good, too. Yeah.
They also got rid of, well, obviously, because you're third level, you start your subclass, but they got rid of the first level.
That's true, spells. Too, which is Bless and Cure Wounds. So that's a good
point. Raise Dead like make zombies? Is that what
no, Raise Dead means bring someone back to life.
Oh, okay. Right, I thought it was like make, you know.
No, like no, that would be animate undead, I believe, or animate dead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically it's revivifies now at fifth level and then.
Yeah. Yeah. So they did some tweaks. I don't know. I'm neither here nor there about it. So let's move on.
Disciple of Life is another third level feature. Your healing spells are empowered by life itself, baby. When a spell you cast with a spell slot restores HP to a creature, that creature regains additional HP on the turn you cast the spell. The additional hit points equal 2 plus the spell's level.
Yep, neat. That's identical to the PHP.
Heal harder.
Next one.
Preserve life. You can use your channel divinity to heal a group of critically injured. As an action, you expend one use of your channel divinity and present your holy symbol, restoring a number of hit points equal to 5 times your cleric level. That's a lot. Choose any creatures within 30 feet of yourself. You can choose yourself and divide those hit points amongst the chosen creatures. This feature can bring a creature's current HP to no more than half its hit point maximum.
Oh, I guess there is one slight difference here. It's identical in all ways, except for here it says in the PHP that you can't use the feature on undead or construct. But no limitation stated the UA.
Yeah.
That almost feels more like an oversight than a change.
Well, also, I mean, maybe they were worried about those poor Warforged.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there's that. Yeah, okay, fair enough, fair enough.
They're fairly popular.
They are. They're fucking cool, that's why.
That is why. Thank you, Ebron. So, thank you, Keith Baker.
Indeed.
Keith Baker, if you're listening and you ever want to be on the show, please.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
10th level, you're going to get Blessed Healer. The healing spells you cast on others heal you as well, baby. When you cast a spell with a spell slot on another creature that restores HP to it, you regain hit points equal to 2, plus the spell's level on the turn you cast the spell.
So it's identical with the only slight factor being that you originally got it at 6th level instead of 10th level, like you just said.
Okay.
Going on.
Do you guys think I should continue to read them like with a more sexy energy as I go?
Oh, yeah. Bring the sexy.
Okay. Yeah. Just like towards when the, you know, by the end of the episode, it'll be as sexy as I can get.
All right. Cool.
14th level, Supreme Healing. When you would normally roll one or more dice to restore HP to a creature with a spell that you cast with a spell slot, don't roll those dice, baby, for healing. Instead, use the highest number possible for each die. Oh, that's cool. Instead of restoring 2d6 HP to a creature with a spell, you restore 12, baby.
It's identical, yeah. With the exception that you get it at an earlier level in the UA. So, okay, I'm gonna be honest. Maybe the reason is because the life domain was already pretty solid, so it didn't really need to be tweaked that much. But other than that, it kind of seems lazy to present this one versus another one. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if I was playing in a campaign that was level 1 through 20 and I had this class in front of me and I was like, oh, I don't get like the core of my features until, you know, between 3rd and 6th level. Like 3rd level, I think, is usually fine for subclasses, but they moved everything back. So you're not just getting a bunch of stuff at 3rd. You're getting like... what you would normally get at 1st at 3rd, and then what you would normally get at 3rd at 6th, and then, you know, it just kind of spaces everything out.
Do you think the idea for that is because they want to dissuade from one level dipping for multiclass?
Yes, but I don't like it. I've never really seen a problem with one level dipping. Like, it's fine. If you want to play that way, like if that's your style of play, by all means, go for it. Like if you want to be a min-maxer, I'm not here to hate on you for that. Like
all the multi-class X-Plays just cheered when you said that.
That's not my style of play.
Yeah. I did some pretty heavy multi-classing experiments in my time as a player, and I always thought it was a fucking great time.
Yeah, it's fun. It's
taking
fun.
Two levels into shit is like prime. Mm-hmm. That's like money spot right there, usually.
Yeah.
Warlock Sorcerer, it's freaking like brie on toast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like warm, delicious brie, like melty brie.
Yes.
Is there any other
that rind though, man? Needs the honey.
So is there anything else we want to add to the cleric or the subclass before we move on to the new revised species?
There was one thing that I think we missed for fifth level feature.
Okay.
I'm not seeing that.
It's not a subclass feature. Sorry, it's a core feature.
Oh.
Let's see. What did we miss?
Smite Undead, I think, is a little.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Different than Destroy Undead.
Yes. Okay. Let's go over that then.
We skipped that one. Rewind.
I'm back at 5th level. Smite Undead. Oh, I have to get less sexy because this is further up in the PDF. You can use your Turn Undead feature to smite the undying. Whenever you use Turn Undead, you can roll a number of D8s equal to your proficiency bonus and add those rolls together, baby. Each undead that fails its saving throw against that use of Turn Undead takes radiant damage equal to the roll's total.
Okay, that is very different. Destroy Undead essentially works where... when an undead fails its saving throw against your turn undead feature, the creature is instantly destroyed. If its challenge rating is at or below a certain threshold, as shown in the circle table above, I'm not going to bother going to the table. My thought on this is I think the two different features should be married into one hybrid feature, where if an undead is of a certain challenge rating or lower, it is instantly destroyed. But if it's above and fails, it then takes the damage instead.
How shitty would it feel to roll 2 ones?
It would, but
I guess 5th level would be 3 ones, but still.
But But like, here's the thing: is like, if it's a low enough undead, it just gets destroyed. Mm-hmm. And then if you roll two ones, well, I mean, that does suck.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I agree with you because then it at least gives you something for using your turn undead.
Exactly.
You know, instead of just like, oh well, I guess I wasted an action and a feature. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's my thought there.
Well, now that the conversation is broken, you know I can't let this pass.
Take a shot.
Everybody take a shot.
Take a shot. My phone went off.
Damn it. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast drinking game. It's back again.
God, it's been so long.
All right.
It hasn't been that long, Daniel. No,
yeah, it's been a couple episodes.
Time is a construct, all right?
People binging this show are drunk, damn it. Get off the road.
Are we ready to move on to revised species, damn it?
Yeah, I'm ready. Selling a little. Or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Shout out to Demogorgon. Shout out to Demogorgon. Oh, yeah. Shout out to Demogorgon.
Okay, so I guess the first thing we talk about is they've changed the name of the types of people that you can play from races to species. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is permanent. I think this is a stand-in until they really figure out where they want to go with this.
Definitely just some waters.
I'll let you guys go first, and then I'll say my piece on how I feel or don't feel about this.
I mean, what page is that on?
So it's going to be a couple pages down from the cleric.
Okay, I went way past it. That's why I was like, where is it?
Daniel, you want to go first?
Yeah, please. I want to read a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, in tune with the cool kids on Twitter. And I've been seeing a lot of the discourse, and I feel like I agree with a couple of different hot takes in that species is a band-aid, but it doesn't really fix anything. Like I think it's better than race. I think it's a step in the right direction that they're looking at this and saying, okay, well, let's maybe get away from the idea that, like, you know, your birth equates you to be good with swords,
right?
You know, and all that kind of shit. And I think they changed a lot of that with Tasha's especially, and I actually really like the changes in Tasha's for that reason. I feel like species is still too scientific for D&D.
Right.
Like species
Definitely has a sci-fi vibe.
Does.
yeah, and it kind of like it still leans into that like, well, your biology is what defines you as a character, which I think is kind of I'm not a big fan. I wish what they had done was taken a lot of the racial features and put them into your background, and then had a few features that were tied to your ancestry or lineage
Yeah, the ones that make
or
sense, like, hey,
origin.
you have wings because you're a bird person, right?
Exactly. Like things that are undeniable. Like
Yeah.
and we're gonna get into some of these in a minute, but like you're a dragon. Dragons breathe fire.
Right.
Congratulations, you breathe fire.
Yeah.
You know, like but yeah, I think they could have radically changed it, and instead they're kind of testing the waters and seeing how people react first. And then we're probably gonna see more changes later as time comes.
Yeah,
Hopefully.
I pretty much feel identical. I think species is an improvement from races for many reasons. I do feel like they had terminology that they could have like just stepped right over to with their lineages, and I'm not sure why they went to species rather than lineages. I do think species has a sci-fi twist. I think it works for Drakenstar if we wanted to use it, because it's a science fantasy setting. But yeah, it feels a little scientific and sciency for a traditionally fantasy game. I think Ancestry works. I think I read that that's what Pathfinder uses is Ancestry. So I'm sure wizards won't use that, even though like who cares if they use it? Use it too. You're wizards. Like do what you want. But
Pathfinder, they have a really cool kind of a phrasing with character creation where they say you're going through your ABCs. It's your ancestry, your background, and your class. And that's
that's
where you get
nice.
your core features.
That's really I like that. That's succinct.
Wizards should steal
Yeah, they should. Fuck it.
that.
But yeah, that's basically it. They're play testing it. I think it's a step in the right direction. It's a band-aid. I don't think it's gonna fix the issue. I like lineages or ancestry better. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's worth noting in here that they're saying like, okay, you're not like regionally bound here when you pick a species. Like they make it a point to say that these species have all spread across the multiverse, so you're not just gonna go to like a certain area. Like the elves don't just live in the Fae, they live all over the place, right? Which is pretty normal for D&D anyway, but the wording here makes it feel even more eclectic than that, which I appreciate that. But yeah, I agree. I don't think this is a fix for those issues, and I'm glad that they're definitely putting their toe in the water on this to see what kind of reaction this garners from their audience. And you know, I think they're going to hear it, you know, at every step of the way, what it is that people they're eventually going to land at something that is a lot more hospitable to talk about, you know, openly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, with that being said, we can get to the three they included here, which is the Ardling, the Dragonborn, and the Goliath, which I think the Goliath is new. I don't think that was in the last one. Or the one before, whichever one had this species. I think it was the first one.
The first UA.
Yeah, the first UA didn't have Goliath in it, I don't
What do
think.
we want to get into in this section? Do we want to talk about these races individually? Is there anything we want to mention with
Well, the Dragonborn one I think is a quick one we can talk about if we want to do that one first, because I think they just adjusted the breath to be in line with Fizban's.
Fizban!
Oh, and Draconic Flight. I don't know if that was in the original UA, and I think it's fucking cool.
God, it's been a while
So
since I said
The breath
Fizban.
one's real easy. Rather than start with 2d6 and then go up a d6 every increment, it starts with a d10 and goes up a d10 every increment. And that's better damage scaling, I'm pretty sure. And it's people outcried pretty quickly about it and they fixed it. So cool.
Yeah, you still get the choice of 15-foot cone or 30-foot line, it looks like, each 5 feet wide.
Which is cool. I can't help but feel like cones are more useful than lines. Am I wrong there?
I don't know. I've seen people do cool stuff with lines. You usually get like two enemies in a line.
I did a cool thing with a line in our last game in Omega. My breath attack
Yes,
hit two.
yes. Yeah,
Yeah,
you hit two.
I did.
And that is something I'm referencing as I dungeon master that game. You can find Super Quest Omega, which is a sequel to Super Quest. Not the sequel.
Sequel,
It is
that's not
not
the
the
right word.
sequel. It is a different
It's the
game
next
called.
campaign.
It's the next campaign that I'm
Yeah.
DMing. You can catch that on Patreon right now with early recordings, but it will eventually hit the feed after FBATS, which should be out now. So I hope you guys are enjoying FBATS on that feed. If that's
Cool.
Flashbang and the Surgeon, that's a superhero one that I do also anyway, or did like fucking 3 years ago or something.
Yeah. But back to lines versus cones.
I like
You
lines.
like lines. Okay.
Because I mean, I think it kind of depends on what you're running. Like if you're doing like a dungeon crawl, You're in a bunch of narrow corridors. Lions are going to be your best friend. Like throwing
this
down a
true.
Lightning bolt, you're going to hit like 10 zombies. Like,
yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in a narrow hallway, doesn't your cone just turn into a line?
Yeah. Also it's much shorter.
It's a shorter line.
Yeah.
Cone has a lot
and
more
length
likelihood
matters,
to
Brian.
Hit your friends than a line does.
How? Yeah. I guess length does matter.
Anyways.
Sorry, Brian.
Cones are more about girth.
Let's read Draconic Flight, please.
Okay, where's that?
Because it's pretty cool. It's the final feature you get as the Dragon
Oh, so
Board.
Down here at the bottom is what you're saying. I have found it. Draconic Flight. It is bold. When you reach fifth level, you learn how to channel the magical energy of your Draconic Ancestry to give yourself temporary flight. As a bonus action, you sprout spectral wings on your back that last for 10 minutes or until you're incapacitated, or you retract the wings as a bonus action. But don't retract those wings, baby. Let them out. During that time, you have a fly speed equal to your speed. Your wings appear to be made of the energy used by your breath weapon. And once you use this trait, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest. Mine looks like Icebreaker's mints.
Absolutely. That's hilarious. So my
spearmint. Fear my cold.
My experience reading this feature was okay, that's pretty cool. I mean, flight is solid and good. I felt weird about like the temporary wings thing until I got to the line that says your wings appear to be made of the energy used by your breath weapon, and I remembered I'm running a blue dragonborn in Omega, and I'm like, lightning wings, fuck yes, this is amazing. I love this feature.
Absolutely, like coming out like jet energy. Yeah. Is super cool.
Like thematically, I think it's fucking cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is an improved version of the gem dragonborn from Fizzbands.
Fizzband.
Oh, okay.
All right. yeah, so it's a little bit better than that. That one I think is 1 minute. This one's 10 minutes. But pretty much everything else is the same. But that one, only the gem dragonborn got it. The chromatics and the metallics got something different. I like the fact that it's now universal. That's a nice touch.
They're all dragons.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I think it's a big improvement. I mean, I already like Dragonborn just in general. Like, this makes them more on par with some of the better species mechanically out there, and it's fucking cool. And I love the flavor. And I'd love to give my new Dragonborn some lightning wings if that's possible. Okay. We'll see.
This is a non-fourth edition stamp of approval from Will.
Indeed. All right, now let's move back to the Ardling, and this one's going to be a longer discussion, I'm sure. And I think we can just read through the whole thing.
Yeah, because what is an Ardling, right? This is a newer introduction.
Yeah, so the Ardling was one of the things that got the most pushback from the original UA from what I read about
the
surveys.
Yeah, people were hype in a bad way.
Yeah, whatever the opposite of hype is.
Energetic, but downtrodden at the same time.
Sure.
Should I just read the description here?
Yeah, but for a quick reminder, the Ardling is like the new kind of answer to the Tiefling, the celestial version of the Tiefling in a lot of ways, with a animal twist, which I'm going to talk about because I had an epiphany this morning that we'll talk about afterwards. But go ahead and get into it, Brian.
Animal to twist his dick. I just thought about that right now. That's a deep cut.
Yeah,
or not.
A deep cut.
Anyway, celestial animals roam from the Beast Lands, that's capital B, Beast Lands, a plane of untamed beauty and wild nature. Many of those otherworldly animals serve the Beast Lords. And in the early days of the multiverse, some of the animals evolved into bipedal forms. Among their number are Ardlings, people with beast-like heads, keen senses, and an innate connection to divine magic. Long ago, the ancestors of Ardlings migrated to the material plane, baby, and Ardlings can now be found on many worlds. An Ardling has a head resembling that of an animal. Depending on the animal, the Ardling might also have fur, feathers, or scales. Some little and others hulking. Ardlings are as varied as the animals they resemble. That's it. That's the end of this. That's the end of the
Oh, thing. Yeah. I wanted you to do the whole thing.
Oh, I'll keep reading.
Yeah.
Ardling adventurer traits. The creature type is humanoid. The size is medium. It ranges from 4 to 7 feet tall or, you know, a couple meters. small ones are 3 to 4 feet tall. That's like 1 meter. Chosen when you select this species. I like having that option, like the Herringon. Speed is 30 feet. Lifespan is 200 years on average. Pretty good. not the best in the game.
Double what I'm going to live, probably.
Yeah.
It's interesting because they like towards the end of racial features in 5e, they started going back away from longer lifespans to being like, no, everyone lives as long as a human. And now they're like, oh, wait, that was boring. All right, fuck that.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I was like, that sounds super boring.
Yeah.
Like one of the big things about D&D is like elves outlive, like humans are dogs to them, like in a way, you know, like
I understand what you mean. You outlive,
like the good one. I see that quote. I forget what the quote is.
Humans are like, dogs to us.
No, it's like the good ones like choose to stick around with us, even though we're not going to live very long. Like they're friends till the end. The good, no, I guess, I do, yeah, that's
hear what
fair.
You're saying, though.
You know, you got me there. No. I'm trying to quote something that I don't know where it's from. Those are not my words.
I understand the sentiment, and I do agree.
Vaguely referencing Lord of the Rings.
Maybe that like seems like a thing.
Yeah.
Before we get into the features of Ardlings, I guess we can go over my quote unquote epiphany. So, when this first came out in the first UA, they really pushed that it's like a celestial thing, right? And they do in this too because number one, they mentioned the Beastlands and yada yada, but at the end, there's some divine magic stuff. And a lot of people were really worried that, hey, this could replace the ASMR, even though they said it wouldn't. Reading through this one, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I think people were worried in the wrong direction because I got to thinking about 5e and I was looking through the different races of 5e and I was like, you know, there's a lot of animal ones, like a lot of animal ones. And maybe they don't want to have to keep up and publish, I don't know, 40 animal races. What if they found a way to consolidate those 40 animal races into one single race? And I'm like, I think that's what they're doing with the Ardling. I think we're not going to see the Aarakocra or the Herringon, or if we do, they will be a version of Ardling. What do you guys think of that?
Well, yeah, they're categorizing them in the next section to like group them. Just like here, we nailed four of them. They all do this.
Right.
Like that's exactly. We're literally going to read that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that makes sense. One thing that I think I don't know if Wizards is avoiding referencing it specifically for some obvious reasons, but in terms of like aesthetics, these are Egyptian gods, right? Like,
right.
like they talk about having like a, you know, a canine head and then like just otherwise being mostly human. I'm like, oh, that's Anubis. Cool. Like I'm with it. I think it's pretty cool, but also like all spade is spade, I guess.
No, they talked about that more in the first UA. Now in this one, at the very end of the flavor text, they go, hey, some of them are covered in fur and feathers and scales and stuff too. So I think it's a little bit of both.
I mean, yeah. Stephen King is doing this big in his books, like especially The Dark Tower. I think they're called the Cantoi, and they are this. A lot of them are like rodents, you know, they're rat faces, but they have a humanoid body and they wear like skin faces, like Mission Impossible sort of.
I remember that.
And you know, they look a little funny, like, you know, because you see this humanoid person walking, it's like something's up with that skin, and it's because they're wearing skin face or whatever.
I can't get over the fact that Stephen King wrote himself into his own book.
Hey, whoa, that's huge spoilers for it's pretty. Also,
okay, if you
know, it's more common than you think. It's more common than you think.
No, it really is very. It's actually very common for writers to write themselves in.
A lot of times they will write themselves into a book with a slightly different name.
Yeah, I like the stuff that happened when he showed up, though. That shit was crazy.
It was a cool book. I was like, does it really have to be you, bro? Like,
yeah. I guess it does. Because like in the storyline itself, it like really fucking does have to be him. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, he wrote himself into that shit.
Wow.
You wouldn't believe, man. Should I get into this animal?
Yeah, let's go over the features.
You are descended from a celestial animal. Choose one of the ancestry types below. Then choose one of the example animals listed for that ancestry, girl. Or similar animal. You gained the benefits of that ancestry, and your head resembles the head of the chosen animal. We got the climber. There's bears, cats, lizards, and squirrels. You have hooked claws, sharp nails, or a serpentine tail. As a result, you have a climb speed equal to your speed, and once per turn, you deal damage with your unarmed strike to a target. that you can increase the damage to that target by an amount equal to your proficiency bonus. Would you like me to continue to read? Or should
yeah,
I stop
we can just go
it?
Through them because they're all going to be similar concepts.
We got flyers. Those are bats, eagles, owls, and ravens. You have vestigial wings. As a result, when you fall at least 10 feet, you can use your reaction to safely glide downward or falling with style. Pixar style, taking no damage from the fall. I can't believe they wrote that. In addition, when you take the jump action, you can flap your wings to gain advantage on that action's ability check. Then we got the racer. Those are deers, dogs, horses, and triceratops.
That's a weird one. One of those isn't like the other.
No, none of those. One of those isn't like anything we've read so far. Except
also,
for maybe
what makes
lizard.
It why a triceratops for the subclass that it, or subrace that is fast? Like I don't think of speed when
are
I think of
fast?
A triceratops. Like, I think of a velociraptor.
Why not rhinoceros?
Just like tanky horned boys. Like,
yeah.
Like rhinoceros. It's not even rhino, it's triceratops.
Yeah, it's got fucking three of that shit up
That's
in its
hilarious.
Face. Well, when you take the dash action, your speed increases for that action, and the increase equals 10 times your proficiency bonus. That's cool. So like 30, 40. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's actually very fast.
Yeah, it's quite quick.
Okay, so swimmer, you get crocodiles, dolphins, frogs, and sharks. You can hold your breath up to an hour at a time, and you have a swim speed equal to your speed. In addition, you have resistance to cold damage.
I'm surprised they don't just give you the amphibious feature or just the ability to not need to breathe air. But whatever.
Yeah, that was all of them.
So yeah, this is, I'm just like, well, you know, these kind of like, basically if you make an Ardling flyer, you kind of have an Aarakocra.
But they don't actually fly, they just float. Like they fall
yeah,
with style, right?
I guess that's true. But maybe they're trying to get rid of like flight. The Dragonborn doesn't get flight either. It gets like temporary flight. So
Yeah, but even the Dragonborn flies better than these guys. Like the Dragonborn gets wings for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Time.
Maybe
and
it'd be
these
cool.
Ones, they're like, you have wings, but also go fuck yourself.
They're more ornamental than anything.
Yeah, you're wearing a hang glider. Congratulations. Yeah.
Well, maybe they could add a thing where like at level 5 it gets a little bit better.
At level 5, you learn to fucking flap that shit. Wow, that's crazy that it took this long, huh?
I mean, your bones had to hollow out, right? And that doesn't happen until you level up. So.
Yeah. So there's
so dumb.
There's
I
more.
Think the flyer is the weak one out of the four.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think
yeah.
You're right.
I do like that. You get a monk ability. Not like all the bear people get one thing. It's more like, hey, here's one of four like ability types that you can kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's a creative way to do it and a good way to do it. But you mark my words. They're gonna try and replace all the animal races with this one. We'll see. Divine magic, you want to read it?
Yeah, sure. You can innately channel minor divine magic. You know the thaumaturgy spell. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can replace that spell with a different zero-level spell from the divine spell list. Intelligence, wisdom, or charisma is your spellcasting ability for any spell you cast with this trait. Choose the ability when you select the species. You also get keen senses. You have proficiency in the perception skill.
Yeah. That's how I feel but about both of those.
Yeah.
I mean,
cool.
I love thaumaturgy. It's a great cantrip, but like usually when it comes to the divine magics, there's like the you get your cantrip and then you get a spell level 3 and a spell level 5. Granted, you do get the other animal features above, so maybe they're trying to balance it there. And perception. I mean, extra skills always nice, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you're
sure, the tracks. Dragonborn though, like
Dragonborn, big improvement. Big thumbs up.
Ass compared to the Dragonborn.
I just don't think I don't think they've done well with Ardling so far. I've yet to want to run one.
It's a fumble.
I think so.
I'm gonna call it.
We're gonna move to Goliath.
Yeah.
All right.
They're really big.
This one's very interesting and drastically changed from the OG Goliath.
They're so tall. Should I read the thing?
You should. Go ahead.
Towering over most folk, Goliaths are distant descendants of giants. Each Goliath bears that. Blessings of the first giants, or bears the blessings of the first giants, blessings that manifest in various supernatural boons, including the ability to quickly grow and temporarily approach the height of the Goliath's gigantic kin. Goliaths have physical characteristics that are reminiscent of the giants in their family lines. For example, some Goliaths look like stone giants, while others resemble fire giants, whatever giants they count as kin. Goliaths have forged their own path in the multiverse. Unencumbered by the I don't know this word. Internecine?
Internecine.
Internecine? unencumbered by the internecine conflicts that have ravaged giant kind for ages and seek heights above those reached by their ancestors.
So already, just in the flavor text, big change. You know, Goliath have always kind of been very heavily related to stone and mountains. And now we're saying, like, hey, there's a bunch of subtypes because there's a bunch of subtypes of giants. Why wouldn't there be a bunch of subtypes of giant-related creatures? There's more to read.
I think it's cool that they decided to make them giantkin again because they weren't when they introduced them in 5e.
Yeah, and honestly, we don't want to talk about what they were in 4e. So,
Internecine
means making them giant people.
Yeah, destructive to both sides in a conflict.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Sense for the warning.
So. It's a good habit to look up words you don't know, folks.
Absolutely,
that's what reading's all about.
All right, do we want to get into these features?
Goliath adventurer traits: they're humanoid, medium, 7 to 8 feet tall. That's like 2 meters almost, I guess. Or more.
It's more.
It's more than 2 meters. 35-foot speed, 80 average years of life. As a Goliath adventurer, you have the following special traits. Giant ancestry, you are descended from giants. Choose one of the following benefits, a supernatural boon from your ancestry. You can use the chosen benefit a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. You got the Clouds Jaunt, which is from a cloud giant. As a bonus action, you magically teleport up to 30 feet to an unoccupied space you can see. You get the Fire's Burn for Fire Giant. When you hit a target with an attack roll and deal damage to it, you can also deal 1d10 fire damage to that target. Frost Chill from the Frost Giant. When you hit a target with an attack roll and deal damage to it, you can also deal 1d6 cold damage to that target and reduce its speed by 10 feet until the start of your next turn. Hill's Tumble, Hill Giant. When you hit a large or smaller creature with an attack roll and deal damage to it, you can knock that target prone. That's neat. Stone's Endurance, Stone Giant. When you take damage, you can use your reaction roll, reaction to roll a d12, add your constitution modifier to the number rolled, and reduce the damage by that total. Storm's Thunder, Storm Giant. When you take damage from a creature within 60 feet of you, you can use your reaction to deal 1d8 thunder damage to that creature. Should we break for thoughts?
Yeah, let's talk about this a little bit. I like this. I think it's cool. I think it's cool that you get a flavor, your Goliath. And Stone's Endurance makes it so that if you like the OG Goliath, you get to keep it by going that path. I do think Fire's Burn is really cool for low level. Like that extra D10 of fire damage that doesn't take a bonus action to do. It's like almost as good as a Paladin Smite. And you just get it at level 1. That's pretty cool. It probably falls off as, you know, the levels go up. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I think this is the right way to approach a redesign for the Goliath. I think giving you a handful of options that act as like pseudo sub races without it being like a full, breakdown is really smart. I think most of these are kind of even footed, like the teleportation one, I think it's just cool. Fire's Burn, I think it scales because you get more uses,
more attacks level, and more uses. Right? Yeah, that's true.
Because it's equal to your proficiency bonus. So I think that'll kind of help it. The same thing with Frost Chill and then Storm's Thunder, which being able to use your reaction, especially because, you know, the Goliaths tend to be martial classes just thematically. Mm-hmm. I think giving you something kind of cool to do with your reaction by just like clapping some thunder on people is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's solid all the way through.
I don't know what it is about hill giants. I kind of like them.
I mean, just knocking people flat. Like, that's just fun.
Well, like, part of it is that they're so fucking gross.
They are very gross.
They're, like, disgusting. And their Mouth of Gralantor thing is, like, a personification of that. And it's, like, just fucking gross. And there's something weirdly cute about them, I guess. Like, it's called Hill's Tumble. Well, come on, dude. Come on. Large form, starting at 5th level, you gain the ability to supernaturally grow. As a bonus action, you change your size to large, provided you're in a big enough space. Didn't the Rune Knight do this? The Unearthed Arcana one?
Yeah, it has an ability to do that.
Yeah. This transformation lasts for 10 minutes until you end it as a bonus action. During that duration, you have advantage on strength checks, and your speed increases by 10 feet. You can use this trait. Once you use this trait, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest.
It's pretty cool. It's nice being large.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that increase in 10 feet of speed is nice because I don't know if you guys noticed, but the base speed for this Goliath was 35, so you already had the extra 5. Mm-hmm. So this brings it up to 45, which is pretty cool.
The long legs.
I guess they really don't want, you know, to mess around with large means more damage.
I was thinking the same thing.
I always feel weird about the stuff that gives you advantage on strength checks but doesn't translate to any extra damage. It's just a little weird. I understand the reasoning. I don't know how I feel about it.
I think even like allowing you to add like your proficiency bonus or something to your damage rolls if you make like a melee attack would make sense. Like something where it just gives you a little bit of extra damage.
Yeah.
Because you're fucking big. Like if you're 12 feet tall and you're swinging around a greatsword, you're going to hit pretty damn hard.
You know, also we were just talking about the disparity between marshals and casters, and like this is just a little thing that, you know, help that disparity be a little bit desperate, bit less desperate.
They did mention, Crawford mentioned on the latest video they did for this one, or for the feedback they got from one D&D's.
That's Jeremy Crawford, employee of Wizards of the Coast.
That's the one.
Find him on Twitter for rulings and stuff.
Yeah, go harass him for all your rules lawyer needs. He did mention that they're revamping equipment, so I'm hoping that maybe that will help to account for this.
I heard the same thing, so we'll see. We'll find out.
That's probably a good move. I think some equipment
could
use some revamping.
The last feature here. Oh, did you have something?
Yeah, well, because of the last feature here, because when you're large, you can like grapple stuff one size bigger than you, so that matters.
Especially that does with matter. This You're next right. thing,
powerful build. You have advantage on any saving throw you make to end the grappled condition on yourself. You also count as one size larger when determining your carrying capacity and the weight you can push, drag, or lift. Now, I think that means you can roll dex or strength to get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you get advantage on both of those.
Absolutely.
You'll probably do strength, right?
I'm pretty sure you get this feature. The OG Goliath gets this feature too, I'm pretty sure. Powerful build. And I'm pretty sure it's identical.
I don't think it has the first part.
It doesn't have the grapple effect.
Grappling. I think it's just you carry a lot of shit.
Okay. That's cool.
I remember playing, so the Forge Cleric I mentioned earlier was a Goliath Forged Cleric.
Oh, cool.
And I was just the pack mule.
Give it to that guy.
Shit.
I am a bag of holding.
I'm like, you can hold this whole chest, right? You know, I guess.
That's
strap
great.
It on.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I am Tenzer's floating disc.
Pretty much.
So you're getting advantage is really good. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah.
Getting out of grapples is also good.
Yeah, that's true. I like the grapple aspect of this because you are big and strong, right? That makes sense.
Yeah. All in all, I like this subclass. It would have been cool. Mm-hmm. I guess they could have added resistances to to damage types if they wanted to, but I still think this is enough, and I'm not really too concerned with adding like your fire resistance for the fire giant Goliath.
You got one little nitpicky thing. I would have put powerful build before large form in terms of just like organization.
Agree.
Is large form starting at fifth level and then powerful build. Okay, when do I get it?
Yeah, I think that's just always a small oversight. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Just a little
true.
Thing. Just a little.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're right. I agree.
All right, guys. Well, I think we've covered everything we set out to cover today. Is there any last comments or concerns?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more here to this UA. There's a lot more reading to do if you are into that. I think we did cover, like, just kind of flipping through it. We're hitting, like, you know, there's all this minutia down here about like what D20 tests are, and you know, there's like dazed is down here. All that stuff is like, do we really just want to kind of read stuff to you? I think the discussion based stuff has been addressed.
Covered.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel. Well, thanks for coming on, man. It's always great to have you. Look forward to seeing you in the next one.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Well,
go ahead. Let Daniel do
Daniel,
do your
tell
thing,
us
man.
About who Long you are and what you things. Do. Don't be like me and forget to plug your book.
Yeah.
Hey, last I'm time here. We didn't take a long rest and we caught shit about that in the Discord.
We did.
But like we had a spiritual long rest on that one where we talked about Diversity Saves, a very noble charity, I must say.
Yes. So I am the co-founder and president of Diversity Saves, which is a new nonprofit organization. We opened up officially earlier this month in December of 2022, if you were listening to this in the future.
Congratulations.
Congratulations for surviving whatever happens in 2023. Diversity Saves, we're a nonprofit organization that our whole goal is to help to amplify the voices and help sponsor creations by TTRPG creators who come from marginalized Black backgrounds, you know, BIPOC and LGBTQIA plus people tend to not get the same kind of opportunities as other creators do, just by virtue of not always being seen and heard as often and not always having just the right foot to start on. And that's kind of where we want to come into place is, you know, provide grants, help to just, like I said, amplify the voice through marketing or just even, you know, giving advice. We are a group of BIPOC and LGBTQIA members and creators ourselves. Everyone on the board works in the TTRPG space, and all but one member is either LGBTQIA plus or BIPOC, or sometimes both for many of the members. And everyone is a firm believer in our cause. And so we've just been working tirelessly to get everything off the ground. We finally did, and we've had our launching event, which is going on right now. It's December 1st through 10th. We're doing the 12 games of Critmas over 10 days, which I've messed up many times, but it is 12 games over a 10-day period. Each game features giveaways from a number of different creators who have generously kind of co-sponsored the event with, you know, digital map packs. I know Crucible gave some print copies of their book. Alchemy RPG is given away like 1 month subscriptions. Shard gave a year-long subscription. So we have just tons of different giveaways during each event. Each event is posted on our Twitter, on our Instagram, at Diversity Saves. You can also find information on our website at www.diversitysaves.org. And it's just a lot of fun, and all the money is going to go back to the community, back to TTRPG creators, marginalized communities. And yeah, we hope to see you there. If you catch this after the event, you can still find us on our website and on our socials, and look forward to future events. Thanks for giving me a platform to talk about it, guys.
Dude, of course. What you're doing is awesome. And yeah, we will include all the links to everything you said in the description. So if anyone's interested in supporting it, get in there. Do it.
Definitely.
This is awesome.
I highly recommend. Yeah. You're definitely going to be supporting a good cause.
Yeah. But, and you'll probably be seeing us on some events later next year. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. All the dust and smoke settle from some other things. We've got a couple big announcements coming up for us as well. We're not hitting them here. Go check out Diversity Saves and catch us on the next UA, and we'll get Dag back on here. Thanks a lot for coming on, Daniel. We really appreciate it, man. Also, like, if you want to be part of a great community of people loyal to us specifically,
And Demogorgon.
And Demogorgon, you can find a link below for
our Discord,
which Daniel is very generously
our admin. Of.
So
indeed,
I'm also there.
it's gonna be our main, like, form of social media moving forward. We're going to really lean in to Discord, I think, from here on out. So it's going to be even more important than it has been.
Huh? It's my favorite one of all the social medias.
I'm having such a hard time hearing you. I heard you that time. I'm just going to take one of these little headphones off.
At the end of the episode.
At the end of the episode. Finally getting this shit right. I don't know why all of a sudden I can't hear you anymore. Did something change? No, we're good. We're recording.
We're good. We're recording.
Yeah, we're solid.
All right. I think we can get ready for our long rest and we could call it a game.
Yeah.
Let's do it. We'll talk to you guys later.
Let's do it. I don't know if we need a long rest.
No, I don't think we do. I don't think we do.
The Dungeon Cast.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.